What was it like being a DJ for the Flower Station 764 in Osaka, Japan in the early 90s? And how did you get started in music?
I moved to San Francisco and went to school at San Francisco State, and I, you know, had been growing up listening to college stations and so excited to get on the air, you know, wanting to play crazy music. And so I got involved with the station there. It was a pretty low-end station. They didn't even broadcast. It was kind of out of cable, but I had a good time doing it. And I think my first show I played at SF State, my voice, I would turn on the mic, but it wasn't really on, and so it was just silence while I was talking. And through that station, I think I'd been doing it for maybe a month, I applied for this thing just kind of randomly that came through the fax machine in the station to DJ in Japan. They accepted me strangely because I had no experience. I don't know why they did. It was really odd. I think I made an audition tape, and they just flew us out there, me and two other people. And so really, we sat down in this booth. It was at this, you know, expo for flowers, a world exposition, and we would sit in this booth and we'd pick the music and we'd just turn on the microphone and turn it off, and they had three people doing the technical stuff, putting the records on. I didn't even touch records. I really didn't know what I was doing. I mean, like I said, I was, you know, 18, and I was absolutely overwhelmed, and it was crazy at the time. And I was just kind of getting into hip-hop a little bit through Public Enemy, being kind of blindsided by listening to Public Enemy right at that time, and they wanted me to do a dance music show. I didn't know anything about it. They had this guy programming it, and it was terrible. I just knew that it was terrible. He would play, like, a whole Doors album, and I thought, this doesn't seem right, you know? It just kind of seemed like he was randomly throwing stuff out there, and so I kind of convinced him to let me take a crack at this dance music show based on what my kind of ill-informed ideas of what dance music was supposed to be. And I immediately, like, went out and tried to listen to what I thought was supposed to be dance music, which at that time I supposed it was house, you know. They gave me, like, a little budget, and I would, you know, go and buy records. They had friends that had tons of, you know, libraries, and I would dip into their stuff. I was just digging out everything I could, like, really fast, and programming these shows. It was five nights a week. It was crazy. So I was just kind of bombarded with music that I didn't know anything about. It totally affected me in that I was blown away by it. You know, I was looking for house, but that's because that's what I thought was dance music, but I ended up coming across so many different things. And my only criteria was that, you know, I guess I'd listened to it and I thought, this is either, you know, some stuff would sound cheesy and some stuff would sound hard. And I kind of, like, gravitated towards the beat heavy stuff. That's kind of what happened there. And it was nuts. I mean, Japan was crazy. I was there for 7 months and it was a good time. Just a little bit crazy. It was really great in that it transformed, you know, my idea of what music was, you know. And it was a good, I mean, it was quite a difference from, I grew up in a really small town in California called Placerville. I mean, I just, you know, I just got into San Francisco and suddenly I'm in Osaka, and it was quite a shock. Osaka is broad neon.
Your music in the beeps seems to be a unique combination of hip-hop, electronic music, even noise. Is there any concepts behind this album?
You know, there is, but it's really hard. You know, I couldn't put it into words. I definitely, I'm looking for kind of a vocabulary of junky noise, and I have to say, like, you know, I'm aiming for something, start creating music, and I'm trying to, each track, I'm trying to hit a certain target, and I'm usually immediately switch directions every time I start. It's just kind of the way it goes. With that record, I really wanted to try to bring, you know, harder sounds to the table than my last couple of things I'd been making either were pretty experimental or kind of, you know, keeping towards the friendly side of things and kind of quirky. And I wanted to upend it a little bit and make it either, you know, something people would really like or kind of, you know, make a sour face at. I didn't want to land in the middle spot. And you know, it's funny. I mean, there's pieces of it that, you know, it's broken into chunks of when it was made, which, you know, when certain tracks were made. And, you know, each spot that I'm hitting is a different kind of, I guess it's pretty common for people, but, you know, into a certain kind of flavor. But overall, I mean, I've made tons of tracks, and the ones that ended up on the beats were the ones that kind of seemed to tell some kind of story that I can't put it into words. You know, when I hear, you know, I've been reading some reviews of this record saying, you know, it's all over the place, it's all these different genres and whatnot. And I agree, but, you know, I mean, it's also, these tracks, to me, personally, it's weird. I think of it as kind of one piece all the way through. You know, the tracks are kind of incidental. You know, the tracks don't really stand alone. You know, I guess I think of it as a full piece. You know, I guess everyone who's making a record would like to think that that's what they're doing, but I don't know where it starts and where it ends, but, you know, there's a story in there. It's just a story of noise and vocabulary of sound.
Excellent. Oh, No, I really like that description. You helped form Quaketrap, right?
Yes.
What was the idea behind the label, and who is a part of Quaketrap?
With Thumbtack Smoothie and Shaggy Manatee, the two guys, we were in a band called Pancake Circus, a freaky experimental hip-hop with MCs that weren't really MCs and noise, you know. We played some incredible shows. I mean, I'll never, ever forget that stuff. It's never going to be as sweet as that was when we were, you know, really, really on top of it. We had some horrible shows, too. When that kind of fell apart, because it kind of had to, it was a weird collaboration, but we all, you know, we love each other, and we all make crazy music in different kind of genres. Shaggy's straight-up hip-hop, and Thumbtack is really experimental, but we all love the same kind of stuff, so we want to keep going with this, with our, you know, we trust each other and we respect each other so much, we want to put out records and work together, so we collaborate when we can, and we also, you know, put out our own music. So that's, Quaketrap is just a platform for us to release stuff, and we we have other people on board too, but that's the core, that's who started it, you know.
Awesome. So is it just like San Francisco artists on Quaketrap?
Yeah, you know, we have a girl from Australia, her name's Romy, she goes by Macromantics. There's a guy, Opt Rhyme, who's out of Chicago area. He's in Helium 3, which is a defunct collaboration of hip-hop that we put out a while back. But yeah, other than that, it's San Francisco. You know, we're kind of building a collective, but the collective is just a loose term for a collection of people who are willing to play with each other. And the collective before was very serious. We were all Quaketrap, and now the collective is anyone who wants to can join in, submit, listen, and we can, you know, play together. But basically San Francisco, you know, there's a kind of a world built around, in my mind, you know, I'm just telling you from how I experience the music around here. There's this store called Robot Speak, which is in a Lower Haight area, and it's this little basement. You go down and they sell software and they sell machines and noise making stuff, electronic stuff, and they also host like a music series where you play and, you know, talk about what you're doing. And I think long ago, a couple years back, that they had me play there, and I think that was the beginning of kind of a watershed of, I don't know, connecting up with people for me and for Quaketrap too, because we all rolled through there. But they're kind of a hub for people who aren't quite, who are just kind of in the same kind of realm. We make music and we experiment and don't, you know, we're not super well known. You know, there are actually lots of people who are super well known rolling through there, but there's this kind of a alternate community of underground people that gather there to exchange ideas and whatnot. And I met guys through there who now are, you know, really important cogs to what we're doing. You know, they're like, we're putting on, you know, monthlies and weeklies and hanging out and that sort of thing and playing out a lot. They're a good focal point for different people who are just kind of creeping into electronic music and wondering what's going on. This Robot Speak place, kind of because they're so open, you can come in there and see what's going on. It's a little hub, and they're kind of key to everything that's going on with me right now personally. Mm-hmm. It's kind of come through them. I mean, they've introduced me to people, or I've met people through them, or, you know, it's kind of this cross-pollination thing going on that just gets better and better. I'm really enjoying, you know, hanging out with weird dude. Have you ever heard of this Mochi Pet guy, by the way?
Yeah, I have, actually.
This guy, you know, I had never heard his music. Through these guys, through Robot Speak, I hooked up with him to put on a show, and mm-hmm. I had never heard his music, and I didn't even know who he was. And so we're, you know, emailing and whatever, setting up a show, and I go and listen to his music somewhere. I can't remember. I listened to something online. It freaked me out. It's like if you're playing a movie and with somebody, and all of a sudden it turns out that it's Martin Scorsese, you know, it was this kind of intense. I was almost scared to talk to him after I listened to his stuff. I mean, I went out and got one of his records and I listened to that and I went, oh my God, this guy's insane. He's okay, you know, he's hanging out there at this place, and it's crazy. There's all these people like that just kind of roll through there that are monsters, you know. It's kind of shocking to think that you can actually, you know, hang out and talk to people. You know, I'm just kind of feel like I'm fairly new to this, and suddenly I'm, you know, running into these incredible people and just finding out that they're open, you know, it's no big deal. But mm-hmm. it's a little weird, that kind of threshold crossing over and meeting somebody and being kind of blown away and almost frightened by their talents, you know?
My next question is, what is the Hail and Ride music series like, and what has it done for the music scene in San Francisco?
Well, I don't know. It's hard to say, you know. We kind of, it's weird because we initially started that to avoid worrying about, you know, we wanted to have this kind of weird experimental night, and we asked if we can do it on Tuesday. It's in this really special place in San Francisco called the 222 Club, and it's special in that it's this old speakeasy jazz club. You go in and then you drop down in this basement. It's this brick room. It's really small and it's just beautiful. And the sound in there is just perfect. There's nothing like it. When I first went in there, I freaked out. I thought, this is the most amazing place I've ever seen in my life. Luckily, the guy who owns it, I used to work at a restaurant with him, and he approached me a long time ago to come, you know, check out his place. And they were pretty new, and they're in a really kind of horrible area of San Francisco, the Tenderloin, which is the crack-addled kind of prostitute, freak-out kind of sketchy section of town that people are actually afraid to go to sometimes. But it's, you know, they have this club here, and they had no one booked. They had nothing going on, and so we thought, let's make it even easier. Have it on a Tuesday, and then we can have weirdos in here, and we'll drink there, eat their pizza, hang out, and it'll be a fun thing for everybody, and it'll be loose because they won't care because they weren't expecting anything on a Tuesday anyways. But it kind of, the club and that night, occasionally, I don't know, kind of grew. We're not sure how it worked. I think it's a combination of people that have never played before, having their first show or they don't play that often, and suddenly, you know, everyone that's been waiting to see them play come out. But it's been, you know, it's been packed occasionally, which is really weird. And then, you know, every once in a while it's not. But, you know, we're pretty random in our selection. We've had people roll through there that are really well known. We've had people that no one's, you know, it's like I said, it's their first show, and they just make really strange music. Everything from, like, there's a dude that had like a broken Furby doll, this little weird electronic toy, and tape decks with tape spilling everywhere, and a projector with he's using the sound off of the projector and making a bunch of horrible noise. And on that same night, this dude Wobbly was playing, and he's, you know, around here he's really well known, sort of, he's in Sagan, sort of semi-leadish group of people, but anyways, around here. And, you know, that was kind of what we were aiming for, was to have, try to build this night that it could be anything, and also that people who do a lot of stuff in the electronic realm that people know about can come play, as well as the weird guy that's in his basement building stuff out of junk. So I hope it's, you know, it's hard to say, you know, we really can't, it loses definition every time we have a night, because, you know, every time, you know, it doesn't really have a firm, it's this idea being there is no genre. We have, you know, weird stuff. We have this guy Ralph Carney play a couple times now, actually. He's coming up in a couple months. He's a guy from Tom Waits who's the main horn, you know, wind instrument guy. And he brings his band in there. It's like a rock show. And then, you know, any other night, that wouldn't happen. There's super down-tempo nights. There's people that come in and DJ. We have no clue what they're going to do sometimes. We know by what they have out there. But I guess it's free form for real. And I'm not sure if it's quite figured out itself yet. But it's definitely something that people come see, which is great. We didn't ever expect that. So we're happy. You know, we also post the shows. You can hear quite a few of them on Beta Lounge. If you haven't been there, it's betalounge.com is the site. I hang out with these guys who, they do shows out of Hamburg. And then in San Francisco, one of the Robot Speak guys and another guy, a German guy that's here in San Francisco, they post shows there. You can go there and you can listen to free music. They have, I don't know, thousands of hours of stuff going back to 1996 or 8, I don't know. It's crazy. If you've never been there and you like electronic music, you gotta go and listen. I mean, there's crazy sets there. They have, you know, 6-hour sets, tons of stuff, and from all over the world. They just, whoever, I guess, I don't know exactly the protocol for what went up there in the early days, but I know right now there's a live show every week in Hamburg, Germany, and then anything that we can either get people to record or record ourselves, we feed to those guys and they post it up. We'll be right back.
What software or instruments do you use in your music creation? I also noticed you had kind of a lot of like chopped up vocal samples and stuff like that in the beeps, and I was wondering kind of where you get those or what instruments or software you use.
I have to say, I mean, of all the that I know and work with and whatnot, I'm probably the least skilled. I'm not a musician by any means. I know a lot of people who are. So I know what it means to be a musician, and I'm not. Everything I'm doing is from a non-musical and only from an ear standpoint, meaning I love music and I feel music, but I'm not a musician. And I think of myself as living proof that anybody who likes music should be making music, because there's no reason why you can't with the stuff that's out there. And right now I use Cubase is a program that I just kind of use as a platform. It's a recording thing, and I kind of gather stuff with a little mini disc player. I use Reason a lot, and I think most electronic musicians frown upon it, but one thing about Reason is it's super easy to get the hang of, and it was one of the first things I ever played with, and I love Reason in that it, you know, it looks weird. I think people who have never played with electronic stuff will look at Reason and think it looks complicated, but it's actually super simple. You just spend a moment getting used to it, and anyone can play with it and make sound. And I really love Live, which is the Ableton software thing. It's fantastic. It's crazy. There's so much you can do with it for coordinating all your stuff and putting it together. Live is great. I use it for shows too. It's the most fantastic thing in the world. So those are Reason and Live, and you know, little Cubase are probably the guts of everything that I'm messing around with. And then outboard instruments that feed into there, like whatever keyboards and random junk noises and drum machines and things that are either harnessed through Live or that are just dumped in, recorded, and then dumped into stuff and chopped up that way. Vocals, I know there's that track where that one guy's yabbering about bounce and this. And I used to teach beat making in Oakland High School, and I met this guy, or one of the kids that was a student. His name was B Child. His name's Robert, and he had this friend. He's been doing the like, gangster rap projects at the Quake Trap. He's been coming in, and he brought this guy in who was just going crazy, talking about just all kinds of insanity. And his name was Steve. Actually, the project Steve was doing is called Turf Hog Evangelist. I should probably shout out to him, because his rant about bouncing and his rims and all this stuff was the most amazing thing I've ever heard in my life. And so there was this kid. He's probably 17, and he's in the Quake Trap yelling about bounce and throw your hands up, and I got big toes in the club and all this stuff. Just all those kind of cliched things, but hyperactive, and he's actually so skilled, just so angry and crazy. He went bananas, and so I just kind of took a little clip of him and threw him in there, kind of chopped it in a strange way that when I played it for him, he wasn't too pleased. He didn't quite get what the hell I was doing.
That's probably my favorite track on the album, actually. I think it's Infinite Collapse Part 3, is that...
Right. Yeah, it's funny because that whole thing, they're all one song. I just had one. It was so disjointed that I split it up into three and just rearranged everything so that, you know, each song could be by itself, because when it was all together, anytime I played it for somebody, like, what the hell is this? It was just one big thing, and it went through all these parts all together, and I split the three kind of main flavors of it up, and that was a really interesting, I guess, kind of exercise, I guess, is what it ended up being. But when it was done, I mean, I liked all the tracks put up like that, and that was fun. And that one, you know, I just wanted to have that kind of, it's a simple, if you listen, I mean, there's not that much happening there. To me, it was kind of infectious, that guy's voice and the big organ sound, old school beat blasting behind it and then kind of falling apart. There's one sample on there on the whole album that isn't legal, but other than that, everything's stuff that we built out of, you know, the Quake Trapper ran into people, recorded people. There's Tenderizers on there. He's an MC from here. There's a German girl named Jenny Pfister who yabbers on the first track. I mean, pretty much throughout, if you hear any vocal sample, we recorded it, except for it's from a movie, a weird, obscure, and I'm sure that nobody's ever seen this film other than me at, you know, 4 in the morning.